Turn, if you would, to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, of course, last week we took a look at Revelation chapter 21, but now we're going to take a look at Luke chapter 15. Without looking, who knows what that chapter's all about? All right. It must be one of your favorite chapters, right? Luke chapter 15. Notice what it says in verse 1 and 2. Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him speaking of Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. Now, Jesus had been talking to sinners, those who were ostracized in the nation of Israel, and he's trying to help them. Then the Pharisees come along, and you know what? They criticize him for receiving him, for receiving the sinners. Now, that means that he welcomed them, and he welcomed them with open arms. And these Pharisees, when they saw that, they murmured against him. They criticized him about being concerned about the need and condition of sinners. So to refute this attack, he gives this parable. Now notice what it says in verse 3. And he spake this what? Parable unto them, saying. Now, notice that word is singular. It doesn't say parables. It says parable. And in this parable, there happens to be three different stories. And these stories all show the love that Jesus has for sinners and the desire that he has for them to come unto him. Notice the lost sheep. Notice in verse 3 through 7. Here we read, and he spake this parable unto them, saying, what man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Either what woman have... Oh, we'll stop right there. Now notice, here we see unsaved people, and they are referred to as lost sheep. You know, far too often, we liken lost sheep to the Christian who has backslidden or drifted away. But that's not the case in the Bible. Jesus calls lost people lost sheep, and he does so in Matthew chapter 15, verse 24. It says, but he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, Jesus likens lost people to lost sheep also in Isaiah chapter 53, verse 6, where it reads, all we like sheep have what? Gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. Now, this parable is trying to show us the truth of 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15, where it says, this is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation that Christ Jesus came into the world to save what? Sinners. So why did Jesus come? He came with a purpose, and that purpose was seeking and saving that which was lost. Now, notice, the shepherd left the 99 in the wilderness. Notice what it says in verse 4. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until what? He find it. Now there's a song that says there were 99 that lay safely in the shelter of the fold. That song's not true. Joe's back there bobbing his head. Now these 99, they weren't in a shelter. They were in the what? Wilderness. However, there was much more concern for the one who had gone astray than for the 99. Even though there were 99 in the wilderness, that one was on the shepherd's mind. And the shepherd went to get the lost sheep. Notice in verse 4 once again. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness, and what? Go after that which is lost until he find it. Now, notice the word go. Now, he didn't invite the lost sheep back to the fold, did he? He went to get that lost sheep. He sought him. You know, oftentimes people will say, you know what, I found the Lord. You ever hear people saying that? You know, I remember reading a story about some Chinese fellow was in San Francisco, and he was testifying in a church, and after the service, this lady comes up to him and says, you know, I'm so thankful that you found Jesus in China. And he say, I don't find Jesus. Jesus find me. Isn't that the case? So, notice, he goes after the sheep. Now, this is also something that we could apply in our own lives to our soul winning. Now, it's nice that we invite folks to church and sinners to church. And hopefully when they come to church, they hear the gospel and somebody delivers it to them. But you know what? That's not what the church's mission is. We are supposed to what? Go and get them. Go ye into all the world and what? Preach the gospel to what? Every creature. Not just some, not just who you prefer, but to everybody. That is called the Great Commission. We're all supposed to be involved in it. Now, it's great that we invite folks to church, but we are to go out and get them and bring them to Jesus. Notice what it says in Psalm 126, verse 5 and 6. Psalm 126, verse 5 and 6. They that sow in tears shall reap in what? Joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with what? Rejoicing, bringing his what? Sheaves with him. And so here we see we're supposed to go. We are to be laborers in the fields that are white unto harvest. Now, are we supposed to just go with a dried-eyed Christianity, or are we supposed to go with broken hearts and compassion? You know, some of us go forth and we're just looking to put another notch in our belt. That's not how it should go. People need to know that we care. People need to know that, you know what, we're compassionate. The shepherd goes after the lost sheep. And notice the shepherd sought until the sheep was found. Notice in verse 4 once again. At the bottom of that verse it says, and go after that which is lost until what? He find it. Now he kept on seeking. He did not give up. You know, so many Christians go out once or twice soul winning. And you know what? The whole world isn't getting saved. They might not see anybody saved. And so what do? They say, oh, this doesn't work. Oh, the gospel just isn't effective anymore. And so they give up. Now that's a crying shame. You know what? You keep on going and eventually somebody's going to get saved. And all that labor is worth that one soul because that one soul is worth more than the entire world. They give up. They don't go anymore. They don't give up the gospel even when people come to them. Folks, we need to be diligent about this matter of reaching others for Christ. Then notice the shepherd rejoiced. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was what? Lost. Now, the same thing is found in verse 9. Notice what it says in verse 9. And when she hath found it, she calleth her friends and neighbors together, saying, what? Rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I had, what? Lost. And then, of course, you also see it later on with the prodigal son. You see that when he came home, there was great rejoicing as well. Now, there was much rejoicing. Look at verse 7. I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in what? Heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no what? Repentance. So, how many would like to have joy themselves? Oh, yeah. How many would like to see other people have joy? How many would like to be part of being responsible for there being joy in heaven? Oh, yeah. You say, well, how can that happen? It happens when you go forth with the gospel and you see other people saved. You see, you can have joy. And you know, if you see someone get saved and you're co-laboring with Christ in that matter, you know what? You're going to have some joy about you. I mean, it's a joyous occasion. And then, you know who else gets joy? The convert. Man, they got joy now. Their sins are forgiven. They're on their way to heaven. And you know where else there's joy? There's joy in heaven. And you know, when you read about that joy in heaven, it says a joy in the presence of the angels. Does it say the angels are rejoicing? Doesn't say that. Now, I don't know if they are or not, but it doesn't say that. There's joy in the what? Presence of the angels. Now, I wonder who's in the presence of the angels. God, and I would imagine it, fellow saints up there. So the rest of the family of God is rejoicing as well as the Lord. Now, some of you are robbing yourself of joy. You don't go. You say nothing. Terrible situation to be in, isn't it? You rob yourself of joy. Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. It's what I'm talking about. Well, preacher, you don't understand. I got a house to clean. Oh, okay. You don't understand, preacher. I got a car to wash. Oh, okay. We see where your priorities are. Pretty sad, isn't it? How many here are glad somebody told you about Jesus? All right. Now, don't you think someone else ought to be able to raise their hand because you told them about Jesus? Now, this matter of soul winning is just for a period of time. It's be all of our days. Once we get saved, we're supposed to open our mouths and we are supposed to declare that we are redeemed and share that faith with others. It's just not something you start and stop. You say, well, how long have you been doing it, preacher? Since 1984. Decades. And you still go at it? Yeah. And I still enjoy it. And I have fun when I'm going. Now, I'm sure not everybody I talk to is having fun, but I'm having fun. And it's an enjoyable time. And it's nice to go out with somebody that you can co-labor with. You can enjoy some sweet fellowship together as well. We ought to be going after the lost. Then notice in verse 8 through 10, notice what it says. Either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it? And when she hath found it, she calleth her friends and her neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I found the piece which I had lost. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. Now, this is an interesting story. Here you have this woman. She had 10 pieces of silver. Now, this wasn't 10 pieces of silver or 10 coins in her purse, and she happened to lose one. These were coins that were worn on a cord or attached to a chain, and it was to be worn around her neck. Now, it was given to her by her husband at marriage, much like a wedding ring is given to a wife today. These 10 coins were attached to each other, and they were worn around the neck close to the heart. The woman had lost one of these coins. That would be much like a woman who loves her husband lost her wedding ring. Now, if you don't love your husband, it doesn't mean much to you. It doesn't. You could care less if you pawned it. But if you really loved your husband, it means a lot to you, doesn't it? And you know what really means a lot to you? The one that you got married with. I remember years ago, I had some extra money, and I thought I was going to be a blessing to Connie. So I took her to Jared's. Jared the Galleria. He went to Jared's. So I take her in there, and I'm going to surprise her. And we get in there, and the lady says, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'd like to get my wife a bigger wedding ring, you know, a bigger rock, you know. And because, you know, the one she has is only 2 carats. And so I want to get a 3-carat diamond. I wanted a little more than a piece of dust on a ring. But anyway, so we go in there, and they're showing us all kinds of different settings and stuff. And then all of a sudden, I see her, she's starting to weep. And I'm thinking, oh, man, she must be really happy. Right? She's getting an upgrade. And then she says, I don't want it. I said, what do you mean you don't want it? She said, I don't want it. That's not the one I got married in. This is the one that means everything to me. Saved me a few grand. I was like, that's the kind of wife you ought to marry. All these ones wanting upgrades and bigger and better. That's sad. They're not happy with the one you gave them when they said, I do. But anyways, can you imagine losing that wedding ring? You really loved your husband? Man, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? And what would you do? Wouldn't you search the whole house? Wouldn't you sweep it? Wouldn't you go under the couch? You go all over the place trying to find that wedding ring? Because you know what? Your husband's going to come home and you're going to say, hey! And he's going to look at your hand and say, what happened? I didn't know we were fighting. It would be disappointing, wouldn't it? And so she does everything, lights a candle, goes all around the house until she finds it. Now you may think, oh man, those 10 pieces of silver must really have been worth much. Not really. Back in those days, it was like 15 cents, 20 cents. And of course, a penny was a day's worth of wages. And so it really wasn't all that expensive. But it was priceless to the woman who had those things around her neck. Now, this shows something of the love of Christ for sinners as he wants to bring people to himself. Now, she lit a candle. Now, why would she light a candle? Because the house was dark. That's where people are. Lost people are. Men love darkness because their deeds are evil. You ever notice if you were lost and undone and well into your 20s or longer? You know, you ever go to a bar? It's really brightly. It's brightly lit, isn't it? No! It's dark. It's dingy. Why? Because men love darkness because their deeds are what? Evil. You know, sometimes you go to these romantic restaurants and they're all dimly lit. You know why they're dimly lit? Because they're probably dirty. And you're still paying high prices. No, they're trying to make it romantic, aren't they? And they jack up the prices because it's, you know, the environment and the atmosphere. And it's like, no, I go there because if the food better be good. Forget the rest of the stuff, you know. But anyways, she lights a candle. You know, folks, we need to realize we live in a dark world. And you know what we're supposed to be? The light. And we're supposed to give those that are in darkness the light of the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. We are to go forth and we are to find the unsaved, just like this woman was looking to find that piece of silver. She swept the house. You say, well, what would that have to do with anything? We are to have a clean house. And I'm not talking about the place you live. I'm talking about your life. You know, the saints that find the most lost people are those who have the cleanest house. You know, we are to have clean, holy lives. We are to be separate from the world. You see, the world just doesn't want what it already has. You know, that's what's so wrong with this contemporary Christianity. You got your Christian rock. Well, they already got rock. And you know what? They got better rock than Christian rock. And they'd rather have the authentic than you throw in a few little lines about Jesus in it. That's why we ought to look different. We ought to talk different. We ought to walk different. They need to see a difference in our lives. We are to be separate, not like them. You know, I remember when I was lost and undone. And you know, I was sitting in a bar. I was 18 years old. And this guy comes up next to me with a beer in his hand, and he wants to tell me about Jesus. Now, I had no idea what the gospel was. But you know what? I was infuriated. You say, why were you infuriated? Because I knew what I was doing was wrong. And you're sitting here doing the same thing that I'm doing that's wrong. And then you want to tell me about Jesus. And I looked at him and I said, dude, you better get away from me before I hurt you. Because I'm about ready to clean the floor with you. I said, I don't want anything to do with your Jesus. And by the way, I still don't. He said, what are you talking about? I don't need a Jesus that can't deliver me from my sin. I don't need a Jesus that allows me to remain in my sin. I don't want that kind of Jesus. I need a Jesus that can deliver me. That'll change my life. Not keep it as it is. That's why we ought to listen to different music. We shouldn't always go where the heathen go. Then notice, she sought diligently. In other words, she sought with all her heart to find that lost coin. Nothing else seemed to matter. There was only one thing she wanted to do. How is it with you? You know, some of us have lost family members. What is your one great desire? Is it to get a promotion at work, to make more money, to live in a bigger house, drive a fancier car? You got wrong priorities. It ought to be focused on the salvation of your loved ones. You say, wow. No, that should be a natural thing once you get saved. When I got saved, you can ask Connie, I had a huge burden for my family. Huge. You say, well, what'd you do? I would pray. You can ask her 2-3 in the morning, she'd wake up, no doubt, and I'd be pacing in the bedroom, begging God to save my family. You know, when the altar call hit, a lot of times, most all the time, I would come forward. I'd wet that altar with my tears, begging God to save my family members. I don't see that anymore today. We sit there pretty content. We're not burdened like people used to be. Is there something wrong with today's Christianity? You know, remember the woman of Samaria? She got saved. And you know what? She went home, she kept her mouth shut and kept it all to herself, didn't she? What was the natural thing for her to do? She rejoiced, told all her friends, hey, I got born again. You should see this man I was talking to. He gave me the water of life. What's with us? Kind of natural, don't you think? You know, if you got a quarter raise at work, you'd be, oh, man, I got a raise. You drive a new car, you want to show everybody that what your new car is all about. You show the family, oh, look at this. And they rejoice with you. But you can't tell them about Jesus, can you? Crazy, isn't it? You say, well, you know what? Preacher, where are these lost people? Just step outside the church house. The world's full of them. Remember reading a story about a Civil War. And the battle lines were drawn. And there was a skirmish the day before, that earlier in that day. Well, that night, this Confederate soldier, he decided, you know what, he's not done fighting. So he goes out and he captures about a dozen Union soldiers and brings them back to the southern line. And one guy says, man, where'd you get them? He said, man, the woods is full of them. You just got to go out and get them. Problem with some of us is we're wearing Confederate jackets and Union pants. Nobody knows what side we're on. She sought until she found the coin. She didn't give up. She continued. It seemed to be her consuming passion. And then, of course, we read, there was rejoicing in verse 9 and 10. Just like the joy that is found in verse what? 7. Then this parable ends with the story of the lost son. Charles Dickens said this is the greatest story ever written. The story of the prodigal son. And really when you look at it, it could be titled The Story of a Loving Father. Because the father never left his love for his wandering boy. We're all probably pretty familiar with the story of the prodigal, are we not? And can you imagine how much he must have wounded the father's heart when he said, hey, give me my inheritance. Basically, he's saying, you know what? I wish you were dead so I could claim what's coming to me. Yeah. I don't want to wait till you're dead. Give it to me now. Now, how many fathers would be impressed by that? And would think, boy, that's a great son I got. Nobody would. But that's how he was. You know, no doubt he heard about all the good times in the far country. Oh, all the parties, all the good times. You know, it sure beats living on the farm, living under my father's rules and in his house and him making me behave. I want to be free. So the father says, okay, you want it? I'll give it to you. Soon gets his bag of money and all whatever's coming to him, and he makes a trek into the far country. And there he has a wild time, doesn't he? Man, he's got friends. He's the life of the party. And all of a sudden the money runs out. And when the money runs out, guess what? The friends are no longer there. And no doubt he probably goes into places that where he was the big spender and having a good time and sees some of his old friends and say, hey man, how about giving me a handout? How about helping me out? Can't help you. Too bad, too sad. And eventually finds himself what? Feeding the hogs. Now, can you imagine a Jewish boy working in a hog pen, working for a hog farmer? Has anybody ever been around hogs? Boy, they're nice smelling creatures, aren't they? And you know that stench just kind of gets on you. It stays on you. When I was in Iowa, you know, we would drive by these hog farms and stuff and take a good deep breath. And I would look at Connie and say, smells like bacon and ribs to me. But you know, you could go to a grocery store, 2 aisles away could be a hog farmer and you could smell them. And can you imagine this kid? Here he is. The only thing he can get is working for this hog farmer. Now, did the hog farmer really take care of him? No. This guy's threadbare. He's stinking. And he's wanting to eat what he's feeding the hogs. Then finally, one morning, he has a V8. Maybe that night he slept in a Holiday Inn Express. I don't know. But he finally got in his right mind, right? And he's thinking, what am I doing? You know, I'm sitting here feeding these smelly hogs, living basically like them. You know, if I go back to my father, you know what? I could even go back as a servant. And if I go back as a servant, he's going to treat me better than sitting here in this hog farm. And so he decides, you know what? I'm going back home. Hands his pail to the farmer and says, you take care of feeding your own hogs. I'm done. And I imagine that farmer says, yeah, your daddy ain't going to take you back. Your daddy wants nothing to do with you. Look at you. You're a waste of human flesh. I ought to sick the dogs on you. You say, that's all in there? In the Greek, it is. And so he heads on home. Probably no shoes on his feet. Clothes just dirty and filthy. Makes that long trek home. And no doubt he's rehearsing in his mind what he's going to do when he sees his father, how he's going to react, what he's going to say. And every step he gets a little bit closer to home. And then all of a sudden he crests a hill and he looks and he sees the old farmhouse. And all of a sudden from the porch there rises up this figure. And that figure starts running. And he's thinking, oh man, if my daddy's got a shotgun, he's going to blow me away. And that father runs. Before he could even get what he wants to say out, he tackles his boy, weeps on his neck. He's so glad to see him. And he says to the servants, hey! You know that fatted calf I've been feeding all these years? All this time since he left, it's time to slaughter them. That fatted calf. We're having veal tonight. We're going to have a party. My boy is home. You know what? Get that ring. Not the one you got from the Cracker Jack box, but you get that one from Jared's, the Galleria. Because I went to Jared's. And you put that ring on his finger. And you know what? You get that nice robe. You know, not from Walmart. You get that one from Brooks Brothers. You put it on them. And you know what? You get those shoes, not the ones you got from Payless. I don't even know if they're in business anymore. But you get those Allen Edmonds that I had custom made for him. And you put them on his feet. My boy is home. You know, we need to understand no matter how far a sinner has gone away from God, God is willing to welcome them into his loving arms and be a father unto him. But you know what? Everybody's rejoicing except for one. Who was that? That would be his brother. And who's his brother represent? It's the Pharisees at the beginning of the story. You see, the Pharisees don't care for sinners coming to Christ, having their lives changed, and God blessing them. And you know what? He's all bent out of shape, isn't he? He's not happy at all. He says, oh, you haven't even given me a kid to celebrate with my friends. Not even a baby goat. You know why? That baby goat would have fed more than the friends he had. Because he only needed food for himself. A guy like that ain't going to have many friends, is he? But you know, when you read these stories, you see how much the Lord loves the unsaved. In the first story, there was one lost sheep out of 100, wasn't there? In the second story, there was one lost coin out of 10. And in this third story, you see two lost boys, but one got saved. It matters not how many folks are saved or how many are lost, as long as they're outside the fold, the Lord is burdened about them. He's concerned about them. And whether you're saved or lost, he wants you to return to him. The Son of Man came seeking and saving that which was lost. And if we're to be like Jesus, we'll do the same. All right, we'll have some more in about 5 minutes.